Chapter 31. Level to lower level, to the floor of Petaluma Valley, flat as a billiard table, a cardboard affair, all patches and squares of geometrical regularity, where the fat freeholds were farmed. Beyond, to the west, rose range on range of mountains cuddling purple mists of atmosphere in their valleys. And still beyond, over the last range of all, he saw the silver sheen of the Pacific. Swinging his horse, he surveyed the west and north, from Santa Rosa to St. Helena, and on to the east, across Sonoma to the chaparral-covered range that shut off the view of Napa Valley. Here, partway up the eastern wall of Sonoma Valley, in range of a line intersecting the little village of Glen Ellen, he made out a scar upon a hillside. His first thought was that it was the dump of a mine tunnel, but remembering that he was not in gold-bearing country, he dismissed the scar from his mind, and continued the circle of his survey to the southeast, where, across the waters of San Pablo Bay, he could see, sharp and distant, the twin peaks of Mount Diablo. To the south was Mount Tamalpais, and, yes, he was right 50 miles away, where the draughty winds of the Pacific blew in the Golden Gate, the smoke of San Francisco, made a low-lying haze against the sky. I ain't seen so much country all at once in many a day, he thought aloud. He was loath to depart, and it was not for an hour that he was able to tear himself away and take the descent of the mountain. Working out a new route just for the fun of it, late afternoon was upon him when he arrived back at the wooded knolls. Here, on the top of one of them, his keen eyes caught a glimpse of a shade of green sharply differentiated from any he had seen all day. Studying it for a minute, he concluded that it was composed of three cypress trees, and he knew that nothing else than the hand of man could have planted them there. Impelled by curiosity purely boyish, he made up his mind to investigate. So densely wooded was the knoll, and so steep, that he had to dismount and go up on foot, at times even on hands and knees struggling hard to force a way through the thicker underbrush. He came out abruptly upon the cypresses. They were enclosed in a small square of ancient fence. The pickets he could plainly see had been hewn and sharpened by hand. Inside were the mounds of two children's graves. Two wooden headboards, likewise hand-hewn, told the state Little David, born 1855, died 1859, and Little Roy, born 1853, died 1860. The poor little kids, Daylight muttered. The graves showed signs of recent care. Withered bouquets of wild flowers were on the mounds, and the lettering on the headboards was freshly painted. Guided by these clues, Daylight cast about for a trail, and found one leading down the side opposite to his ascent. Circling the base of the knoll, he picked up with his horse and rode on to the farmhouse. Smoke was rising from the chimney, and he was quickly in conversation with a nervous, slender young man, who, he learned, was only a tenant on the ranch. How large was it? A matter of 180 acres, though it seemed much larger. This was because it was so irregularly shaped. Yes, it included the clay pit and all the knolls, and its boundary that ran along the big canyon was over a mile long. You see, the young man said, it was so rough and broken that when they began to farm this country, the farmers bought in the good land to the edge of it. That's why its boundaries are all gouged and jagged. Oh, yes, he and his wife managed to scratch a living without working too hard. They didn't have to pay much rent. Hillard, the owner, depended on the income from the clay pit. Hillard was well off, and had big ranches and vineyards down on the flat of the valley. The brickyard paid 10 cents a cubic yard for the clay. As for the rest of the ranch, the land was good in patches, where it was cleared, like the vegetable garden and the vineyard, but the rest of it was too much up and down. You're not a farmer, Daylight said. The young man laughed, and shook his head. Oh, I'm a telegraph operator. But the wife and I decided to take a 2 years vacation, and... here we are, but the time's about up. I'm going back into the office this fall, after I get the grapes off. Yes, there were about 11 acres in the vineyard, wine grapes. The price was usually good. He grew most of what they ate. If he owned the place, he'd clear a patch of land on the side hill above the vineyard and plant a small home orchard. The soil was good. There was plenty of pasturage all over the ranch, and there were several cleared patches, amounting to about 15 acres in all, where he grew as much mountain hay as could be found. It sold for $3 to $5 more a ton than the rank-stocked valley hay. Daylight listened. There came to him a sudden envy of this young fellow living right in the midst of all this which Daylight had traveled through the last few hours. What in thunder are you going back to the telegraph office for? He demanded. The young man smiled with a certain wistfulness. Because we can't get ahead here. Dot, he hesitated an instant, and because there are added expenses coming. The rent, small as it is, counts. And besides, I'm not strong enough to effectually farm the place. If I owned it, or if I were a real husky like you, I'd ask nothing better. Nor would the wife. Again the wistful smile hovered on his face. You see, we're country-born, and after bucking with cities for a few years, we kind of feel we like the country best. We've planned to get ahead, though, and then someday we'll buy a patch of land and stay with it. The graves of the children? Yes, he had relettered them, and hoed the weeds out. It had become the custom. Whoever lived on the ranch did that. For years, the story ran, the father and mother had returned each summer to the graves. But there had come a time when they came no more, and then old Hillard started the custom. The scar across the valley? An old mine. It had never paid. The men had worked on it, off and on, for years, for the indications had been good. But that was years and years ago. No paying mine had ever been struck in the valley, though there had been no end of prospect holes put down, and there had been a sort of rush there 30 years back. A frail-looking young woman came to the door, to call the young man to supper. Daylight's first thought was that city living had not agreed with her. And then he noted the slight tan and healthy glow that seemed added to her face, and he decided that the country was the place for her. Declining an invitation to supper, he rode on for Glen Ellen, sitting slack-kneed in the saddle and softly humming forgotten songs. He dropped down the rough, winding road through covered pasture, with here and there thickets of manzanita and vistas of open glades. He listened greedily to the quail calling, and laughed outright, once, in sheer joy, at a tiny chipmunk that fled scolding up a bank, slipping on the crumbly surface and falling down, then dashing across the road under his horse's nose, and, still scolding, scrabbling up a protecting oak. Daylight could not persuade himself to keep to the traveled roads that day, and another cut across country to Glen Ellen brought him upon a cannon that so blocked his way that he was glad to follow a friendly cow path. This led him to a small frame cabin. The doors and windows were open, and a cat was nursing a litter of kittens in the doorway, but no one seemed at home. He descended the trail that evidently crossed the cannon. Partway down, he met an old man coming up through the sunset. In his hand he carried a pail of foamy milk. He wore no hat, and in his face, framed with snow-white hair and beard, was the ruddy glow and content of the passing summer day. Daylight thought that he had never seen so contented-looking a being. "How old are you, Daddy?" he queried. 84, was the reply. "S, sirree, 84, and sprier than most." "You must stay taking good care of yourself," Daylight suggested. "I don't know about that. I ain't loaf none. I walked across the plains with an ox team and fit engines in 51, and I was a family man then with 7 youngsters. I reckon I was as old then as you are now, or pretty nigh onto it. Don't you find it lonely here?" The old man shifted the pail of milk and reflected. "That all depends," he said oracularly. "Ain't never been lonely except when the old wife died. Some fellers are lonely in a crowd, and I'm one of them. That's the only time I'm lonely, is when I go to Frisco. But I don't go no more, thank you most to death. This is good enough for me. I've been right here in this valley since 54, one of the first settlers after the Spaniards. Daylight started his horse, saying, "Well, good night, Daddy. Stick with it. You got all the young blood skinned, and I guess you've sure buried a mighty sight of them." The old man chuckled, and Daylight rode on, singularly at peace with himself and all the world. It seemed that the old contentment of trail and camp he had known on the Yukon had come back to him. He could not shake from his eyes the picture of the old pioneer coming up the trail through the sunset light. He was certainly going some for 84. The thought of following his example entered Daylight's mind, but the big game of San Francisco vetoed the idea. "Well, anyway," he decided, "when I get old, and quit the game, I'll settle down in a place something like this, and the city can go to hell." Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.